This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:49 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. Now, a few weeks ago, the Monetary Policy Committee of Bank Negara Malaysia decided to increase the overnight policy rate, or OPR, by 25 basis points to 2.25%, which is the first back-to-back increase since mid-2010.
Now, this triggered a response from the chairman of the Special Jihad Task Force Against Inflation, Tan Sri Anwar Musa, asking the central bank to provide clarification on the decision to raise this overnight policy rate. But is a member of the government right to ask for this from what is known to be an independent institution? And is the rate hike actually uncalled for? So decisions to change the overnight policy rate or interest rates are never taken lightly by any central bank, as monetary policy is, of course, a useful tool to bolster growth or perhaps cool inflation. However, there is always a policy risk in each decision.
So to better understand the key data points that go behind each decision, we speak to Frazee Ali Ismail, Assistant Governor at Bank Negara Malaysia. Good morning, Frazee Ali. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us. Now, according to the Department of Statistics, Malaysia's inflation, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, increased 3.4% in June 2022 from a year earlier, led by a rise in food prices of 6.1%. So will inflation continue to surge this year?
Inflation, now that is really a hot topic. Though I would not say that our inflation is running hot. If you look at the numbers, they remain fairly low. But let's be clear that inflation really is a global phenomenon for a number of reasons. And we are not in isolation in seeing this rise in inflation.
Now, as you say, inflation is not a big thing in Asia, but it's definitely a global trend. I mean, we've seen rates north of 9% for the US and the UK. So help us understand, why is the situation more benign here?
Yeah, I mean, the situation here differs from other countries. Many others, for example, are also experiencing high inflation, not just from the commodity shocks, but also from strong demand pressures. Let's not forget that many of the countries, some of them you just mentioned, had massive counter-cyclical measures during the pandemic with ultra-accommodative policies. What we see today in Malaysia and in many other parts of the region as well is that it's still mostly a supply-driven factors. Demand conditions have improved. That goes well in line with the recovery of the economy. But that is not the main driver of inflation at this point. This recovery is really reflective of the firmer conditions as we emerge from the depth of the COVID-19 crisis. Having said that, of course, I mean, as policymakers, we should not take our eye off the inflation ball. Improving domestic demand in this rising cost environment needs to be carefully monitored. And to some extent, what we are seeing now is that these pressures are partly mitigated by the policies by the government, for example, through price controls and subsidies. There are a lot of chapters of Malaysia experiencing stagflation or hyperinflation. Now, let me be clear, that is clearly not the case for us. We are expecting headline inflation this year to remain within our forecast of 2.2 to 3.2% and for the GDP to be 5.3 to 6.3%.
So you mentioned price controls. Would you say that the inflation rate in Malaysia is artificially low compared to our peers because of these subsidy mechanisms and price controls? Do you know the real rate of inflation, assuming we didn't have these mechanisms?
I mean, certainly these measures help. You are right. You know, subsidies on key consumer items, seasonal price controls, income transfers are some of the measures that we help, particularly to help Malaysians, the low-income group, to cope with rising prices. Had it not been for these measures, inflation would have been a lot higher. But we all know how costly and distortive these measures are, and it cannot continue indefinitely. It's encouraging to hear that the government recognizes the need for subsidies to be more targeted and for us to transition in a manner that is not too disruptive for the economy. But we cannot run away from undertaking the necessary structural reforms to raise incomes and productivity. If we are facing inflation by just focusing on prices, we are playing with one hand tied behind our back. We need to focus on getting incomes up steadily and sustainably.
So Bank Negara, of course, has talked about structural reform changes that need to be made so that the cost of living is more manageable. Now, but on both this income and cost to enhance this household resilience against future shocks. But realistically, what kind of structural reforms do you envision?
let's focus on three forms when we talk about structural reforms. One is inclusivity, especially in terms of reforming our social protection system so that fewer people fall through the cracks. This includes making it more targeted, less duplicative, and with a stronger component to promote upward social mobility. Last year, we published a box article on this in our annual report, in our economic monetary review. The second is getting the right type of investments. The buzzword here is the national investment aspiration. Now, you might have heard this term. This is about getting the FDI and DDI of the right kind. Yeah, and this involves us attracting and putting in place incentives to promote things like automation, digitalization, new cluster, economic complexity. Our bank has continuously emphasized on the importance of effective reskilling and upskilling efforts so that we can create more high-value added and high-paying jobs for Malaysians. Now, we need to focus on getting incomes up sustainably, like I just mentioned. At the same time, we need to be pragmatic, we need to be forward-looking on foreign workers. It will be regressive for us to attract FDI that is here to hire more low-skilled foreign workers. The final point about structural reform is on sustainability. Now, this is no longer a feel-good initiative, but an economic imperative. Yeah, BNM and the financial industry are spearheading efforts to what we call greening finance and financing green. And we want to do this to accelerate the development of industries and support initiatives such as, you know, energy efficient solutions, low carbon technologies. We want to advance alternative green chemicals and the circular economy. Now, the list of structural reforms is long, but let's start with these three key ones. The payoffs will be great and almost immediate. So importantly, we need to shift our conversation from the now to the future.
But let's talk about the now, one of which is looking at government revenue. We're expected to spend 77.7 billion ringgit in subsidies and cash aid this year to counter the rising cost of living, which is the largest amount in history, and government revenue doesn't grow as fast. Is this sustainable, especially since we intend to narrow the fiscal deficit?
But these measures clearly work in the short term. However, we all know how distorted they are, so we cannot continue indefinitely. So the government is already testing out, for example, fuel subsidy experiments, and they have made a firm commitment to move away from blanket subsidy to targeted subsidy. So I think it helps in the short term, but importantly, we need to, as the time, as we progress, as we are more ready, we need to move away to more targeted mechanisms.
So Bank Negara has two remaining MPC meetings this year, and with inflation looking set to stay, what will BNM be keeping an eye on in terms of data points, and will more rate hikes be inevitable to cope with the rising prices?
The goal of monetary policy is to promote sustainable economic growth in an environment of price stability. Now, that is enshrined in our law. One thing is clear, though, that the unprecedented conditions that spurred the significant monetary support during the height of the crisis have since subsided, right? The economy is firmly on a growth path. You know, travel is up, spending is up, hiring is up. So what we need to do is we need to recalibrate our economic policies. To use an analogy, the patient is out of the ICU. Right? And when that happens, we need to adjust the dosage of our drugs and medical treatment. You know, otherwise, if we could, you know, harm rather than cure the patient. So in this environment, there is danger if we keep rates too low too long, be it from excessive demand pressures or unsustainable borrowing. That's why we are adjusting the OPR gradually and in a measured manner. So we also do not want to delay or postpone policy recalibration. We don't want to be forced making huge increases to make up for lost time. And that is the case for some countries. That will be far worse for individuals and businesses in this country.
But you wouldn't want to be behind the curve, right? So what's the delicate balance between not over-tightening and crimping growth while keeping an eye on the ringgit?
It is important to note that when we talk about policy normalization, we are still talking about policy being accommodative. What I mean by that is that the level of OPR is still supportive of growth. What we are doing is just removing the extra accommodative stance that we had during the crisis, since we are no longer in the crisis. So when we look at the current levels, it is still way below what it were before the pandemic.
Frazieli, there have been calls by some quarters for greater oversight over Bank Negara following this recent OPR hike. Do you think these proposals have any merit? Would this make it more difficult for BNM to respond to inflation?
The Central Bank Act of Malaysia 2009 gives the Monetary Policy Committee, the OPR setting body, the autonomy to make these calls professionally and in the nation's interest. Now, this is done in line with international best practices for governance of monetary policy. And importantly, we have a 60-year track record of maintaining monetary stability. So we are transparent in our decision, and we explain our policy to the Parliamentary Select Committee when called. Now, history is filled with examples of adverse consequences of dire inflation outcomes when the central bank is unable to discharge the mandate credibly, be it in the form of hyperinflation or loss of trust in the financial markets. Now, the country and the economy will be far worse off if we go down this road.
Thanks very much for your time. That was Frazieli Ismail, Assistant Governor at Bank Negara Malaysia, giving us a behind-the-scenes look of sorts on how Bank Negara actually decides when to adjust the OPR rate, just the different balancing act that needs to be done in order to, you know, decide whether to go up or down. It's a lot of calculations involved.
Yeah, it's this super challenging job. And the other thing is, of course, you want to make sure that you don't over-tighten in this current scenario, even though inflation is really real and the cost of living pressures is there. But you also don't want to crimp growth, and you also don't want to put too much burden on households, because if you raise interest rates too high, then, you know, in terms of how much they have to pay for loans also goes up. So not an easy time at all.
7:59 in the morning, we're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. After that, on The Breakfast Grill, Philip C. speaks to Ramjit Kaur Virik, Managing Director of Dutch Lady Industries. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.